The first thing I would do in a holodeck is I would try to break it because I can't help myself.
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm. Hello, friends and fans, and welcome to Enthusiasm, the show where we talk about a few of our favourite things. I am your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers, and today we're talking about Star Trek. And I am... Oh, I can't think of a special word for how happy I am that's like Star Trek related.
Effulgent.
Yeah, I am effulgent. Lee
Dilithium.
Delighted to be joined by Kathy, Kareem and Marguerite. I am so smooth. I am totally on the ball today. It is not the end of the week. It is all fine. Right. So, as always, we're going to introduce ourselves alphabetically. So, Kathy, we're starting with you. Can you give us your pronouns and tell us what you do?
Hello, my name is Kathy. My pronouns are she, her. And I am one of the audio masters for Rusty Quill, currently working on Rusty Quill Gaming, for what time is left, dun dun dun, and Enthusiasm.
Wonderful. And next up, Kareem, can you tell us your pronouns and tell us what you do?
Hello, my name is Kareem Cromfley. My pronouns are he, him. And I'm a voice actor, occasional director, and the voice of Simon Fairchild in the Magnus Archives.
Hell yeah. Thank you very much. And lastly, Marguerite, can you give us your pronouns and tell us what you do?
Hello, everybody. I'm Marguerite Kenner, she, her. I do a lot of things, but by day I am a lawyer, and by night I do, oh gosh, pretty much anything you can think of that's podcast relating now. Audio drama, I publish short fiction with escape artists, and I get involved in just way too many projects with way too many excited, cool people.
Right. Let's get started, Trekkies. Okay. I would like to hear from each of you how you got into Star Trek and why you like it, which I'm sure will be very short, pithy answers from everybody.
Sorry.
Oh, Kathy?
I got into Star Trek at a young age, a very young age. If we're going to be specific, I remember walking into the living room when I was a wee lass and hearing the voice of LeVar Burton on the TV and thinking, oh, I'm going to watch Reading Rainbow. And it was not. That was Geordi. And I was very intrigued. And it became a family ritual of watching Star Trek The Next Generation, like every, at least once a week, you know, whenever it was on cable. And yeah, just been loving it ever since.
Oh, Geordi was great. Mm-hmm. He was absolutely one of my faves.
LeVar Burton's one of my favorite people just in humanity, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. He's a freaking galactic treasure.
Oh, that's such a good turn of phrase, a galactic treasure.
He is. He absolutely is.
Would anyone else like to tell me your Star Trek story?
All right, Kareem, rock, paper, scissors. Go.
Okay. I'll leap. I'll leap. I'm somewhat more advanced in years than everyone else on this recording. And as a kid growing up in the 70s, where TV was slightly less choice-worthy and a bit staid and dull, I suppose, but who knows. Star Trek was science fiction, and I loved science fiction when I was young because it was spaceships and all this kind of thing and whatever, you know. I was into UFO and Joe 90 and Thunderbirds, you name it, pick one, I'd watch
nice.
It.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, I started watching Star Trek and watched it a bit then, etc. And I grew up with it because it was always on. Then come the second coming, the movies started turning up and they were great to watch. And then Next Generation, and suddenly I became a full-on frothing nut job when it came to being a big fan. It was
love it.
It was that thing. I mean, Me, like a whole bunch of others, we had this ring of people who would copy VHS cassettes of the episodes. They'd come over from the States, and we'd get these really bad, like, third or fourth generation copies. Eventually, nice. Sort of watch them and see what was going on, etc. But it was, that was the way we did it back then in the 90s. Who knew? So, yeah, I fell in love again with Next Generation, watched the original series, and then I sort of bought all the VHSs as we went through every series, Voyager and DS9, and have loved it. And you know, the whole concept of Star Trek as a vehicle for storytelling, for want of a better phrase, that's the best way to describe it. It's not just sci-fi. It's, well, like all great sci-fi, sci-fi is merely a genre in which you tell stories about humanity. And that's why I love it.
Wonderful. Well, Marguerite, that leaves you. Can you tell us how you got into Star Trek and why you like it?
I am a second generation Trekkie. So my mom grew up on the original series, and I grew up on TNG, The Next Generation. And so Trek was just a fact of life. Like, my mom and I would always watch it together. My mom and I and my siblings and I would go to Star Trek conventions together. I told this story before we started recording, but I spent one summer making Star Trek costumes for various people for pay. So I spent all the time on the bus that summer when I was commuting back and forth to classes, like hand sewing all the chain segments on the flap of the Star Trek IV movie uniform. And I had all the patterns and all the technical manuals and you name it. I was involved with it, like nicknames, and the novels were a huge part of, and remain a huge part of my Trek experiences, the prose specifically, because there's just a huge volume of depth and background that is explored with a lot more, you know, breathing room than you have in a 52-minute produced television episode. So yeah, it's Star Trek is, like Kareem says, it's science fiction, but it's like the core science fiction of like my experience. Many of my friends were Star Wars friends, and I have always been the Star Trek fan, like forever. Forever. Until like literally yesterday we watched Prodigy season episode 2. So yeah, very much contemporary. Trek has never not been in my life.
I also grew up with Star Trek. It was BBC Two. It was on before Buffy, I think. And so I would usually have a double bill. I would have Star Trek and then I would have Buffy.
Nice.
And I can't remember if... Or maybe they were on different nights. But I remember it was BBC Two for sure.
The 6:30 sci-fi slot.
Yes, exactly. And I started with Next Generation. And I watched all of them. I watched The Next Generation, I watched Voyager, and I watched Deep Space Nine. Genuinely did not know about the original series until I was much older. I thought it started with Picard.
I noticed we strategically jumped over Enterprise.
Well,
I'll be honest, I haven't. I've watched a couple of episodes. I've just never got round to it. My wife loves Scott Bakula, so one day maybe we will. Maybe I will at some point again. It's one thing I'd like to do, but just my life is too busy these days.
I think we all feel you on that.
I won't get into my views on why Enterprise happened and everything, but yes, you're right. I mean, it had a dog. There was a dog in space, and we were all very happy about that fact.
Aww.
Yay, the dog.
I was just jazzed for Scott Bakula to being in it and hoping to catch a Quantum Leap related episode, which if there was, I never spotted it. And like,
and that was part of the reason Enterprise didn't work, I think, is they banked so much on sci-fi crossover potential of a known actor.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing the IP rights, hi, says the IP lawyer, didn't let them play with that the way that they wanted to play with that. And so fans got disappointed.
Yeah.
And then you compare Enterprise with Scott Bakula to Lower Decks. And Lower Decks, if you are an older Star Trek fan, is Easter egg high heaven.
Yes.
It is everything you have ever ever wanted in Star Trek, condensed into rapid patter Steven Universe style comedic animation. It is people talk about how they don't like Lower Decks are the analogy I can think of for the Brits especially as people who liked the first four or five or six Doctors for Doctor Who. That generation of people who are like, but I know what Trek it looks like. It's an episode. It's a Western in space, and there'll be a bad guy, and we'll fight, and we'll win at the end. Literally, that's what the original title of the original series of Star Trek was. It's Wagon Train to the Stars. It was Roddenberry attempting to take his Western writing background into the science fiction as the studios were starting to pivot that way. So that's why it has that episodic nature. It's why it has the very clear cut for the day morality, and then when it didn't, and why there was such a big reaction to it. But Lower Decks is, I use Steven Universe as a specific analogy because it is the entry point for a new generation of Trek fans. It is Star Trek very cleverly and very intentionally talking to new audiences in their ways, in their delivery, in their presentation style, but it's taking everything that is the heart of Trek with it. And so if you are someone like me who is approaching an old and who has all of that like deep Trek lore in my veins, then you see the Lower Deck episodes where they're having the mirror simulators, or where they're prank calling the tar pit guy that nobody remembers that had me dying on the floor. You know, it's that Pixar principle. It's that entertainment that speaks both to its target and the generation behind its target. That is just chef's kiss. It is just distilled, crystallized, mainline Trek.
Can I interject real quick on that topic of those Easter eggs? I cannot get over, like, I've only seen season one so far, but getting near the end of season one, you start to not just see, like, the throwbacks of trivia, but also stylistic portions of Star Trek they put in there. It's like the cinematic shots of our two main protagonists going across, like, a large crevasse. It's the action sequences of, like, the traditional somersault into your phaser shot and then, you know, getting the guy off screen kind of thing, and the classic punches and everything. Like, I didn't even realize that those were common tropes in Star Trek because I never bothered to pay attention to it until I saw Lower Decks and realized, oh, yeah, this is, like, super cool seeing that reflected in this.
I want to then, we touched on it a little bit earlier, so I want to explore it now, which is, what is everyone's favorite series of the Star Trek serii?
Does it have to be series, or does it have to be, can it be an entity?
We'll do entity. We can do entities. We can go with the flow. All right, we've got the original series, we've got Next Generation, we've got Voyager, we've got Deep Space Nine, we've got Discovery, we've got Lower Decks, we've got the books that I didn't know there were books, but now I know there are books.
We skipped Enterprise again.
It's so unmemorable. Everybody has a complete memory skip. I love it.
Hands up who's actually watched all of Enterprise.
Oh, wait, all of Enterprise or some of Enterprise?
Okay, the majority.
Again, I did not know that Enterprise existed until relatively recently.
Totally.
I really want to watch it because there's some really great actors in there. I've just never got around to it. So the fact that the majority haven't, I think there's your problem there. it's like I've yet to see Discovery to the point where Jason Isaacs turns up. And, you know, if I haven't seen Jason Isaacs, then I consider myself a complete failure. So I am almost there. So
Jason Isaacs is in Discovery? Ooh,
yes,
I've got a
fascinating story for you about that if you'd like.
About Jason Isaacs in Discovery?
Yeah. So, there are two known main characters in season one and season two of Discovery. In season one, it's played by Jason Isaacs, and in season two, it's played by Anson Mount. both actors originally auditioned for the opposite role and were cross-cast. Yeah, Anson was supposed to play, I can't remember Isaac's character's name. Captain, what's his name? And instead was cast in season two as someone you will recognize because I'm trying very hard not to spoil this for Kareem.
Okay. That's fine. That'll do.
Very nice.
I'm happy to go first with what is my favorite Trek.
Go on then.
Yes, please do.
The best Star Trek movie is Star Trek IV.
Yes, absolutely.
The second best Star Trek movie is Galaxy Quest. Don't at me.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Sorry, the only argument I have
Peter
is that
Peter in the audio version, I agree with you.
But if I have to pick a series, it's DS9. DS9 owes my heart for so many reasons. One, for finally casting a black man in the main role. Mm-hmm. And that actor, Avery Brooks, look him up sometime. He is like all of Star Trek condensed into a human being. His heart is so huge and wonderful. It finally gave us an angry female lead character who was allowed to be physically competent and angry and display that anger and mm-hmm. be justified mm-hmm. in that anger. DS9 turned the corner from Trek being the wagon train to the stars to being contemporary television drama of a science fiction flavor.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Inspired by Babylon 5.
Well, and also competing with, I mean, completely, because... all of a sudden, sci-fi was cool to put on TV, right? So everybody had more eyes, more flexibility, more studio buy-in, more creative leeway.
And the CGI was getting a lot cheaper.
Yeah, very much
so. Or more capable. Yeah, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Although B5 did it on Amigas and DS9 did it on sort of Industrial Light and Magic stuff.
Do you know how they did the original teleporter effect? That
probably
shimmering
did
light.
It 20 years ago.
It's literally glitter in a jar.
Oh,
they
yes, 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 yes.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good.
Nice.
Yeah, and crossing the film streams.
Yeah.
What a better phrase.
Kathy, what about you? What's your favorite Trek property?
I probably will have to lean back on Next Generation, though Lower Decks is slowly grabbing my heart. You know, as probably obvious after our last conversation. I unfortunately didn't really get into DS9 or Voyager that much. Is that the times they came out, I think there was something about the cinematic style that didn't flow with me. It felt like, because it went, actually, what you said before, with it becoming more of a drama. My younger brain wasn't ready to go down that route because of all the time spent in Next Gen. Now that I'm older and looking back at those episodes, like I was like checking in on some of them before this, I was like, oh man, DS9 has got some really heavy stuff when you get into like season 5, season 6. Oh, yeah. Like, oh right, okay, I'm going to put this back on my list now. So
I mean,
I'm excited.
Some of the characters in DS9 were utterly gorgeous, and the acting was fantastic as well. I mean, Garak was such a wonderful character.
Oh, I remember reading an interview with, I can't remember
Andrew.
His name. And Bashir.
Siddiq Al-Fadil, as he was at the time, and now Alexander Siddiq.
Yeah.
And there was me going, an Arabic actor, all right.
They played the two of them as a desperately in love gay couple from the jump and were never talked about it, but it just never dared to let the studio vet it. And it just oozes from their every scene to the point now where it's like, it's gay canon trope that the two of them were a thing. It's glorious.
Kareem, what would you say your favorite is?
Oh, so many. Yeah, I agree with Marguerite. Star Trek IV is by far and away the best film because it's funny, it's touching, it's powerful of what it's saying, etc., etc., and it just has the best gags. Other than that, my favourite episode from pure acting, I suppose, must be anything else, is Family. Which is the episode after Kirk got turned into a Borg and he went back to his brother's vineyard. And has to recover Picard. And basically has a complete emotional breakdown trying to, you know, cope with what he's done whilst as a Borg, etc.
Wait, Kirk got turned into a Borg.
Oh, yes. Spoilers.
I thought the Borg was just a Next Generation thing. Yes. I didn't realise they were around
Kirk,
the original.
Sorry, not Kirk, Picard. My apologies.
Okay. Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I was like,
sorry,
what?
Picard, my apologies, yes.
Imagine Shatner playing a Borg.
Episode 2, Season 4, I think, because it's after Best of Both Worlds, or whatever. I can't remember the specific number, but that it ripped my heart to shreds, because I thought that's actually showing what happens after something like that happens to somebody in his position.
And it's Patrick Stewart in full chops. It's really good.
But yeah, so those are my two favourites, I suppose one can say. Although, if you want to cross-generational, the Tribbles series. Trouble with Tribbles. More Trouble with Tribbles. Trials and Tribulations.
And the Short Trek. Have you seen the Short Trek about Tribbles?
Oh, no, I've missed that one.
No.
Okay, so the Short Treks were a series of really short video clips. I think they're all about 10, 15 minutes long. There were two seasons of them, and they were released between, I believe, like season 2 of Discovery and season 1 of Picard. And they are, one of them is a little prequel setup to Picard, and some of them are side stories that set up a bit more about Discovery. There's one involving, I won't spoil any of it, but there is a Tribbles short trek. I will say the words to you, H. John Benjamin, i.e. the voice of Archer from Archer. It is some of... It is 15 minutes of Trek you don't want to miss. If you have Netflix in the UK, they buried the short treks under like the extras section. So you have to kind of dig around to look for them under Discovery. Yeah. But there's, I think there's a total of 8 of them now. And some of them are animated.
Lovely.
But yeah, there was a lovely other Tribbles episode.
One of the many lovely things about the whole Tribbles thing was if you watch the first one, you can see that the guys in the brown coat, you know, the set guys, are chucking the Tribbles at Kirk, obviously trying to hit him on the head. When you go to Trials and Tribulations, they're doing the same thing as the characters.
Fantastic.
It's beautifully stitched.
On that, I think we're going to go to a break, and we will see you in just a minute. And welcome back. Okay. So, I want to start digging into things. I would like to know who we think is, like, the best captain.
Oh. Of course you had to ask that.
Well, naturally, it's Captain Archer.
Oh. When we remember that his show exists. Yes.
Because one thing that's always interested me about Star Trek is that they all have to make really tough, sometimes morally questionable decisions and are left to deal with the consequences. I do remember one particular Twitter account, which is Picard Management Tips. And it gives actually really good people management advice. If anyone wants to look that up. I would hesitate to name who I think is the best captain because it was such a formative part of my childhood and teenagerhood, all of Star Trek has merged into one, and it's only with difficulty that I can separate out, oh, right, that person is in Voyager and that person is in DS9. Mm-hmm. So I've got no idea, but I feel like Captain Janeway was cool.
Ooh.
I remember thinking that she was cool. Am I incorrect?
I think the answer to that question depends a lot on who you ask.
Yes.
Ooh.
Kareem, you want to start?
I think Janeway was hampered by the series and the writing, which was weak. Mm-hmm. Or weaker, shall we say. I mean, I was wondering why I was buying the VHS tapes every month just because I loved Trek, and therefore it was Trek I was buying them. Because it was... every long-running series has weak episodes and strong episodes. Voyager had a larger proportion of weak episodes and some fairly dodgy character interactions that didn't really make much sense, and some very ham-fisted, how are we going to get ourselves out of this story this week? lots of technobabble, lots of characters dying and coming back and stuff, and it's like, what? Just no.
Really? The main thing I remember is Captain Janeway being very determined and very decisive all the time.
Yes.
And me being like a little bit of an anxiety-ridden child being, wow, imagine being certain of things.
I will put my hand up that being a man, I'm probably coloured in that respect as well, especially being a man of a certain age. Not that I disagree with it, because I'm really happy with strong female characters and stuff like this, you know. Cover me in Babylon 5 and I'll talk you through all of that lot. But I think she was not well served by the scripts, and so she didn't get a chance to shine her acting. She was always very standoffish and stuff like this. And any of the more emotional episodes, that which I remember, were very less well handled, shall we say. And so she didn't get to show her range as well as I would hope her to. I think the
so who would you pick, Kareem?
It has to be Picard, sadly.
Okay.
I say sadly, but no, because
sadly,
he had a great deal of range. He went through a hell of a lot of tough stuff as a character as well. The fact that we got another series with him is fantastic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love all. I don't like picking favorites generally. So it's a perfectly valid question in this scenario, because each captain and each crew member and each episode and each series brings something to the canon, and that's lovely. And I love all of them in their own ways. There are just weaker parts than others. if I had to pick a favorite, I'll pick Picard. But they all had fantastic episodes. They all had weak episodes, but Picard just had the greater range over the 9 series and the films in my place.
Kathy, what about you? Who would you choose?
I would have to go the Picard route as well.
Okay.
With notable nods to Janeway and maybe some to Kirk. I mean, I appreciated Kirk for being the hotshot of sci-fi at the time, which I think was good to have. I mean, it especially coming off the earlier science fiction, like space jockey type,
rocket
to the moon
that.
type thing, space exploration thing.
He was very much of his time.
Yeah, definitely. And the strides that they made through the series with him as captain and the decisions that he made were, I really enjoyed seeing that. But Picard in Next Gen resonated with me so much more because he has a style of leadership that was not what I was used to seeing. I was not used to seeing somebody who was not, you know, the person in your young 20s calling all the shots. I was not used to seeing a leader who put diplomacy first, which
fair.
I think we need more of. a leader who, you know, emphatically says in one of the episodes, sometimes you do everything right and you still lose.
Yep.
That's called life.
Yes.
I mean, that's a lot of good messages that Picard as a captain kind of put out there that I think was very, very much needed then and now. And Janeway, I'm in the same boat. Like, I really wanted to like her character. The times that I did catch Voyager, I think she just was done a disservice. Like, I did appreciate that
Absolutely.
She was a kick-ass captain. And I love her just for the sake of being a female captain in the Star Trek universe. But, yeah.
Can I put a pin in the ground here for the new cast of the films?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think they did a phenomenal job. Particularly Carl Urban, who I will watch read the phone book as far as I'm concerned. I thought he did a fantastic job as Bones.
The Kelvin verse Kirk is so much more enjoyable to me. than Shatner was as Kirk.
Yeah. Once again, men of their time.
Not just because, I mean, and that's not just because they used the Beastie Boys in one of the shows. We haven't even talked about the soundtracks. Oh my gosh, Jacinto's track titles could fill an entire 2 hours. That man is a genius.
All right. We will come back to the more recent films, I think.
Yes.
But Marguerite, I want to hear who your favorite captain.
I have two favorite leaders. The first is definitely Sisko. And the reason for that mm-hmm. is because Picard and Kirk were both white men in charge of a military structured command system.
Yep.
Yeah.
And talk about the lowest difficulty setting. Whereas you take, you take Benjamin Sisko, who is a parent, a single parent, a man of color, in charge of a civilian station where he's managing a militaristic crew and a civilian liaison and civilian concerns. Mm. Ben had so much more to deal with on an interpersonal level than Kirk, for sure, ever did.
Mm-hmm.
Picard,
or at least on screen with Kirk.
Close to. And I think I really loved the crossover episode where Sisko and Picard, still wearing his implant removal scars, converse because it really is that wonderful juxtaposition of the impact these two men have had on each other's emotional lives. Mm-hmm. And so I think Sisko had so much more to deal with than Kirk or Picard ever did.
Speaking of films, let's do the talk about the Star Trek, the latest Star Trek movies, the ones with Chris Pine and Zachary
Quinto.
Quinto.
Mm-hmm. Quinton.
And
Carl Urban.
Carl Urban.
The Kelvinverse.
Yes. The J.J. Abrams, oh God, stop him doing it again, please.
What do we think of him?
How to mess up really good ingredients. it's the J.J. Abrams template. Remake a film badly, remake a film not quite as good as the first one, then try and do something else that's even worse, completely change the plot, and then try and have it rescued by other people.
Oh, dear.
Even a great chef can ruin brilliant ingredients.
Yes.
See, I think that was why I have such mixed feelings on it as well, because when I watched those films, I was like, this feels like something I should be enjoying more.
Mm.
I'm not sure entirely why I'm not. Kathy, what did you think of them?
I'm middle ground. I appreciate them for the candy that it is. But
I love that. That's
there's some good stuff in there. There's Easter eggs in there. It's nice to see Nimoy back on the screen.
Yep.
Yeah, the plot is convoluted.
Well, yes and no. I mean, let's be honest. The second film was a bad remake of a previous one. And it's like, you had all this opportunity to make another fresh story and you badly remade one from the previous crew.
Yeah.
Right. Why? You had...
Oh! I mean, I suppose that's an easy out for Hollywood if that works. Just take every single Star Trek movie and remake it as a new series movie with a twist. But yeah, it's not. They're not selling
I'm
it.
I'm sorry.
Especially when it's nothing but lens flares like every 5 seconds.
As a dyed-in-the-wool fan, I want new stories. I don't want them remaking the old ones. It's just lazy script writing.
Yeah.
It's intellectual property rights.
Exactly.
That's what
it is. It's just lazy. And the last thing I want for somebody with a couple of hundred million budget is lazy script writing.
If you're going to get Idris Elba, use the man. Yes. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And Benedict Cumberbatch as well, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started on that casting. That was a choice.
Yes, that was like, why? Not really Khan, as far as I can confirm from canon,
that's
really.
That's the whitest Corinthian I've ever seen.
Yes, exactly. It's like, how many Asian actors could you have actually got into that role?
And especially with a brilliant character like Khan, if you've read the novels, he is an interesting guy. Yeah. He makes horrible choices with horrible decision, with horrible circumstances. But you can establish a base of empathy with him, if not sympathy. And instead, we have an elven prince in a clear box. Yes. And I don't understand how we got there.
Exactly. It was just such a shame. And I mean, I'm glad Simon Pegg took to helming the next film, because at least he made an original story.
The best part we got.
And it was so much better. But I think, unfortunately, the whole franchise has been held below the waterline at that point, which was sad.
I don't think the Kelvin news is going to go much further. I mean, no. I agree with you completely. There are some fantastic performances, some wonderful Easter eggs and cameos. I will go to the bat for Jacinto soundtracks and just their creativity. Like, you can hear the main theme, which is called Enterprising Young Men.
Yes.
In the season two finale of Lower Decks. That's how well they have been tied together. Yeah. So, I've made Kathy very excited.
I'm so excited.
But then, from a perspective of creatives as we are, isn't it great to see that somebody can spend a whole lot of money and still mess it up?
Oh, I know, right? Talk about freeing. It's like, whew, at least I didn't do that.
Okay. We are coming to time on this episode. So I would like to round us off with...
I said we could carry on talking about 3 hours at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This happens a lot. This happens a lot. I'd like to round us off with like a bit of a fun question.
Okay.
Now, for those who may not be as familiar with Star Trek as we are, on all of the ships, there's a holodeck, which is
the newer ships,
a room,
the bigger ones,
the advanced tech ships. There is a room where you can make it show whatever scene you like, and it's very realistic. And you just go in, you can make it be a nice restaurant. You can go in and sit down and interact with people, and it's all computer animated, and you can do whatever you like in it. And I'd like to know what all of you, like, what would be your ideal thing to make the holodeck create and, like, walk around in? Because I think at this point in time, I would just like it to be a really nice beach and a really nice sunset and one of those deck chairs with the umbrella over it and some endless nice drinks. Yes. And then I would stay locked in the holodeck for a week.
You become Commander Barclay. They have to drag you out of there.
Yeah. What about the rest of you? What do you think would be interesting to make the holodeck do?
We're all stuck in our thoughts now.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one.
Like, what wouldn't we want it to do, right? Yeah. It's literally you have all of Star Trek creation at your fingertips that you can recreate.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, so to an idea, I probably, the first thing I would do in a holodeck is I would try to break it because I can't help myself. So probably what I would do is go in there and key up a recreation of the TARDIS, and then go inside the TARDIS and see if I can create some sort of feedback loop of it's larger on the inside than it is on the outside, just over and over again. Let's see how far we can take
IP it. IP lawyer brain breaking!
I love that, Kathy.
Oh my gosh.
Very inventive.
Spinning me into a potential conversation about Doctor Who, which was the last 5 hours, sorry. I suppose I'd love to join them in the big goodbye in the jazz club.
Oh yeah,
nice. Yeah,
go on one of the noir, investigative detective stories.
Dixon like Hill, isn't it, Trek. The character that Picard liked playing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Every Trek has its like historical reenactment society of Starfleet officers theme.
I think it was full just high-tech LARPing.
I think it was like full on Silver Age to the point where it was filmed in black and white for Voyager.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
You know, They did lots of like Sherlock Holmes stuff and Victorian murder mystery type stuff in Next Generation. Yeah.
I love the one when Sisko went back and was the comic book writer.
Oh, that was so good.
That was such a good episode.
That was sweet. I liked that a lot. I think if I actually had access to holodeck technology, that I'd want to like explore more of that universe that we don't get to spend so much time with. Mm-hmm. Like, we get flyover shots of the Vulcan homeworld or the Klingon homeworld. You know, we don't get to go and walk through it, sit with it. I mean, you want to talk about an opportunity as VR is starting to develop. You know those great slow movies that they did for Star Wars where you could just literally sit and watch an hour's worth of a drone flying over Tatooine or whatever? Mm-hmm. Give me that for Trek, right? Give me that for Khalees and for like, I can't remember what his species is called. Anyway, pick any alien species and their home planet and let me do the slow beauty pass through it for a couple of hours.
So you'd want holodeck Google planet, like...
Well, yeah, because, I mean, think about it. Star Trek suffers from one of those classic issues of science fiction, which is every planet is a monoculture.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that when you go there, all of our people, all 7 million of us on this one planet, have this one culture and do this one thing and wear this one cloth. And, like, let me get into the nitty-gritty. I mean, let me get into the Drell politics of who gets to have a symbiote and who doesn't and what the planet looks like and what our government system looks like.
Or the Drell or the Trill?
Show me us... The Trill, you're right.
Sorry. I was going to say, because Drell, Mass Effect.
It's Mass Effect. Well, tell me Picard season one isn't Mass Effect. Tell me. I dare you.
I will have to watch it first.
But like, show me a season on Khalees that isn't volcanoes at night, right? Get me out of that monoculture per alien species and let me actually experience the diversity of this universe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aw. Mm-hmm. Those are all really, really good answers. I'm so glad. I love doing this. I love doing these episodes. It's so good. You're all so good.
Well, great. Now that we're warmed up.
Yes.
Yeah, already now.
Let's crack out the brandy and have some more conversation.
Yeah.
Let's get into Starfleet politics.
Anyone?
Yes,
no,
please.
No, I have to take command of this ship. Oh. And
can I tell you just one thing really
episode.
Quick? What my ultimate... Can we answer like one more short question and then you can cut us off really, really fast?
Oh,
which
yeah.
is what is the one thing we want most out of a new Star Trek series?
Ooh,
like if
question.
We could write a Star Trek series, what would we want?
Ooh.
And I will happily go first. I want JAG. I want the political fallout and the legal ramifications of Starfleet's decisions. Put me in the United Federation of Planets courtrooms. Let me see us wrangle with those decisions to allow genocide or first contact. I'm such a law nerd, but let me get my law nerd in your Star Trek.
Do you know what? I would absolutely be on board with that, but I would go even further. I would say, like, legal, like, law court drama, but dealing with space disputes. Absolutely. And, like, what are the actual laws? Who
Let me have
vaults
it.
Over the, into the, what do you call the little bit where the judge is? Because I know you're not meant to go in there. But yeah,
like,
who gets
what
dragged
does a
out
UFP
for contempt?
Courtroom look like? How do you build a courtroom environment? How do you have a jury of fair trial if you're the last member of your species?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, oh, I could do this forever. That is what I want.
You're
I want
right.
JAG
great.
In Star Trek.
Kathy, what do you reckon you'd like to see?
Oh, gosh. I mean, now that you mentioned that, I'm thinking like Star Trek CSI. That might just be Torchwood. I don't know how we're managing all that, but it could still be fascinating.
Or like the Corps of Engineers, like who's the crew who comes along after you've poked the thing and you've survived and you run away? Mm-hmm. Who shows up next to put that thing in containment, to scan it, to get its diagnostics, to try and drag it back home, to make some poor graduate students break it apart and figure
it out?
Right,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I freaking
love
that.
I would love to see so much more of like the science
of that happens instead of just accepting the technobabble as it is. Mm-hmm. Let's go into like a scenario where there's engineering of the warp core itself and trying to improve upon it, or science discoveries that go wrong, or just even a closer, something like House, but Star Trek, you know, taking a closer look at all the medical procedures. It would be...
Like Mercy Hospital, like... I mean, that's a whole show right there, right?
Yeah.
Okay, run a hospital for every known species.
Yeah.
Go.
Right.
Right?
They had that in Babylon 5. But just saying.
Bless you.
Really obsessed with Babylon
5. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do mine then, which is actually different. I'll say Section 31. The guys who do the dirty work to make the Federation work to be nice on the outside.
It's coming.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Yeah. Go watch the Tribble short trek. Okay. That's all I'm going to say.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it. There's got to be some guys who do the dirty work, and there's so much potential intrigue and stuff in there. It's like that's one of the weaknesses in TNG. They had so many of those background stories, like when the aliens were infecting a whole bunch of guys, I think it was season 2 or season 3, with a little tail on the back of the neck. That storyline died, and that would have been a brilliant one to take across seasons of that sort of insurrection stroke invasion. And that never went anywhere. Yep. And it's like that story I want to see finished. I want to see what the consequences and how that came out.
Okay. Now it's definitely time to end the episode.
Sorry, Helen.
I'm very sorry. I will see everyone in the next episode of Enthusiasm. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from everyone else. Do you all want to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. It is directed by Helen Gould, produced by Lowry Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner, and edited by Marissa Ewing, Tessa Vroom, Jeffrey Nils Gardner, and Catherine Ranella. Thanks for listening.